Present today are Representative Stapp, Representative Bynum, Representative Hannon, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, Representative Jimmy, Co-Chair Foster, and Co-Chair Josephson, myself. Present today are House Finance Committee Staff Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lustufka, Secretary Barry Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, the Office of Management and Budget will present on its Governor's March 13th amendments. Then we will again take up House Bill 52, time allowing at the discretion of Co-Chair Foster. That bill is on minors in psychiatric hospitals. With us today from the Office of Management and Budget is Director Lacey Sanders. Director Sanders, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Good morning, House Finance. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Director of the Office of Management and Budget. Today, I was asked to present on the governor's amendments that were introduced or transmitted to the legislature on Friday, March 13th. So with that, I will proceed in the presentation.
Yes, thank you.
Great. Right. So starting with slide two, we have an updated short fiscal summary for unrestricted general funds only. This is for fiscal years 2026 and fiscal year 2027. Two things to note. This slide has been updated to incorporate the updated spring revenue forecast that was presented to the committee yesterday. So the revenue above has been updated to incorporate that updated revenue forecast. And then the total supplementals line has been adjusted to include the supplementals that were transmitted last Friday. Overall, as you'll see down here on the surplus deficit line, after the appropriations that were transmitted on the 13th, the overall surplus is a total of $65.9 million for fiscal year 2026. And the fiscal year 2027 proposed budget is a deficit of $1.1 billion. Again, the 2027 budget does include all of the items that have been transmitted by the governor, as well as the permanent fund dividend reflecting the full statutory dividend that we've talked about over the last several meetings.
Director, on the surplus in FY26 management plan, you show a $65.9 million surplus. And I believe yesterday, been so many hearings, but I think that there was at least one presentation that showed a 30 some odd million dollar deficit, excluding the $11 million you're about to discuss in additional supplementals. And I apologize if I'm mistaken about that, but there seems to be a difference. And can you help us account for that?
Chair Josephson, I have not seen that number. I have heard reference to that number. I'm happy to follow up. It may be something that Ledge Finance Division is calculating. I know we do have one difference in revenue when we're talking about the NPRA revenue to the state. The governor's budget incorporates that as unrestricted general fund. That's about $10 million. So there may be a difference there. I also understand after having a conversation briefly with Director Painter, they are looking at updated numbers for the Department of Education's K-12 budget, and I have not seen those numbers yet, other than just briefly seeing an email exchange. There may be other numbers that Ledge Finance is using, but I would need to defer to them on that.
Now, I need the committee to appreciate, as it will and as it does, that many of us have 10 a.m. events. We have this slide deck. We theoretically have a bill on the calendar. So this is an important hearing, but I want to get right into the questions. We are going to go with Rep. Galvin, and then I saw Rep. Stapp.
I can pause.
No. If you have a question, please ask.
Well, I think that in – thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the Chair. There were quite a few kind of uncertainties related to an appeal, I know, with the Department of Education, and that amount was in the order of – I believe $28 million. There was also a $78 million issue around ferries, and then another one. So there's all these kind of uncertain ones that feel like they're bigger than $30 million anyway. And so I wanted to know if that's included in here at all.
Through the Chair, Representative Galvin, the first one that you're speaking to, the Department of Education's disparity test,
yes,
upwards of $70 to $80 million. Mm-hmm. The Department of Transportation's rural ferry transportation grant, mm-hmm. Those items have not been transmitted by the governor and would not be included in our numbers. They are just known items, okay, that we have on the horizon.
Thank you, through the Chair. Follow up. Mm-hmm. So that $65 million then becomes a bit more tenuous. Would you agree, since there are so many of these items, I think three or four at least, hanging out that are more than $30 million alone?
Through the Chair, Representative Galvin, yes. Depending on the outcome of those items, this number could change.
Okay, thank you.
Rep Stapp, then Hannon, then Bynum.
Thank you, Chair. To the Chair, to Director Saunders, thank you so much for being here. I'll be really quick with my questions, Ms. Saunders. So before you, you have a budget surplus after incorporating current known supplementals. We have a bill that is being held by our friends in the majority for $370 million. If we were to transmit that bill to you, that includes the DOT match, disaster funding, fire funding, and HIFE recapitalization with a CBR fail, could you, as OMB director, act upon those items given your current revenue? Through the Chair.
Director.
Through the Chair, Representative Stapp. So I'd like to just preface my remarks with, ultimately, it is the decision of the governor on what he determines to do with an appropriation bill that is transmitted to him. Obviously, we've discussed before, the governor ultimately has a line item veto, a power, depending on a multitude of decisions that he will need to make. Technically, from a revenue perspective, the bill, and I do have a slide on this later, HB 289, if was passed, there would be sufficient revenue based on the revenue forecast that has been provided currently.
Thanks.
Rep. Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Good morning, Ms. Sanders. I want to return to the DOT Rural Ferry Grant, which won't show up in here under the UGF because it's expected revenue from the feds. But what I want to understand is if our total expenditures for the agency are anticipating that full receipt of the FY26 Rural Ferry Grant in the tune of $78 million that's not yet applied for, and whether there's any backstop. I'm looking to make sure that if we don't get that full 78, that we've got room to backstop some money into the ferry system coming out of that surplus of $67 million.
Through the 66. Chair, Representative Hannon, so you are correct. It is federal receipts that we're waiting on. However, the administration, the governor, has not transmitted any supplementals relating to a backstop. And so that would not be counted in the operations on this slide.
Okay. Thank you.
Director, the governor has asked for $51.2 million. Let me start this way. Does your surplus total cover the $51 million deficit noted earlier in the winter as existing under the previous forecast?
Representative Chair Josephson, if you just bear with me a second, I'm just going to fast forward to this slide for everyone. So the governor's bill and all of the amendments that have been transmitted through March 13th total $426 million. It does not account for the previous $52 million deficit that was recorded when I presented to you last time, because we have a new revenue forecast that has provided additional revenue to the state. So my number does not account for any deficit pulling, because there is no deficit at this point based on the spring revenue.
Okay. And a follow-up related to questions from my colleagues, Rep. Galvin and Hannon, does it account for the disaster contingency in the event of the failure of the FEMA appeal?
Chair Josephson, it does not. That item was an item that was added by the legislature in the HB 289. So you'll see in this column, that is how the $373.5 million number is arrived at.
Okay, let's go to Rep. Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Through the Chair, Director Sanders, thank you for being here. Rep. Galvin had asked a question, and your response to her question was, as those items are on the horizon. I just wanted clarity that those are on the horizon and uncertainty, meaning that there may be revenue coming in, there may be a failure of the disparity, or we might win the appeal on that. So is that accurate to say that when you're saying they're on the horizon, that it's just uncertain that they may or may not be issues that we're not certain of?
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, yes. Thank you for that clarification. Yep. They are items that we don't have resolution to at this point. I refer to them as my big rocks. I have a list of items that I know are out there, but we have not reached the point of transmitting an amendment, a formal amendment to the legislature to incorporate due to a lack of a decision or a lack of an outcome at this point.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Shragi, then Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. previously, there was a question asked about if we were to send the appropriations bill, the supplemental bill that's currently in rules to the governor's desk, whether or not you'd be able to carry out those appropriations. And I think I heard the response was that ultimately that decision lands with the governor and that would be under consideration. Has the governor walked back from any of his supplemental requests? What is the decision-making process that would go into whether or not to carry forward those appropriations in the supplemental bill? As far as I'm aware, everything that's in there is a request from the governor. What decision would need to be made?
Director.
Chair Shragi, the governor always has the decision to weigh whatever circumstances are at play at the time that he is signing a bill. The governor has not made any remarks regarding the supplemental bill. It is merely just a point that I am not going to tie the governor's hands in my remarks on what I say on the record, because that is his prerogative.
Can you follow up? What circumstances would change between now and then? Can you give me an idea as to what you think would be a factor that would matter in that case?
Through the chair, yes. Representative Shragi, we can talk about last year as an example for the STIP, the highway match. That was an item that the governor had put forward in his budget. But the outcome, the decision by the legislature was to reapproach funding that was no longer available. And that was a decision that he made to determine that those appropriations would no longer move forward. That is just one example of the circumstances may change. And I'm sure there are others that we could talk through as well.
Follow up. Assuming there's no changes structurally to the bill and it's UGF or let's say CBR, two most likely just straight funding sources, no reappropriations, no complexity, does that simplify the decision? And if not, or even if so, what factors would weigh most heavily, do you imagine?
Through the chair, Representative Shragi, I can't speak for the governor and what factors he might weigh at that point in time. Once a bill is passed by the legislature and transmitted, he goes through whatever process he needs to go to sign a bill.
Chair
and
Justice.
I'm not going to speak on his behalf on that.
Co-Chair Shragi.
Yeah, it's just challenging because we're being told that the governor wants this bill, that we should pass this immediately today so that we can carry out these appropriations. But I'm not hearing a firm, declaration that the governor wants these items that he would carry forward the appropriations. So I would have expected a more robust statement in support of getting the appropriations bill to you all.
Through Director. The chair, Representative or co-chair Shragi, these are all items that the governor has supported and does support. Okay. The decision and the politics surrounding passing a bill in the legislature is outside of my purview. That is the legislature's decision to do make the decisions that it's going to make on passing a bill and what sources of funding are going to be used at that time. The governor does support the items that have put forward. We know we have, we've talked ad nauseum about the disaster funding and how important that is in being responsive to our communities that have had horrible things happen in them. So he has also supported the Department of Transportation STIP. So I, From there, what the legislature decides to do is beyond the purview of what I'm going to speak to today.
Director, I guess what confuses me is it could have been the prerogative of both bodies' majorities to do nothing on these supplementals, absolutely nothing, until the waning days of the session. Would the governor at any point have said, "What are you doing? Help me"? Would he have ever said that?
Chair Josephson, I don't think that's a very fair question of myself, to be honest. The governor, there is a process in place. This process has been well established over the years. The governor brings forward legislative requests that are a priority, that are important, that are known, that we have needs for. The legislature from there takes and does what it is going to do and determines most important. That is a decision by the legislature. That is not something that I am going to speak to.
Okay. Just a comment that normally an executive would be show less passivity and want to intervene because of the bully pulpit. It's their agenda. They would want to say something, and we don't get that. Rep. Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Jefferson. I think I'm just going to put this out there, a warm invitation to work with the governor's office and meet, if not right here in public, back in the offices. I'm happy to meet with, if the governor's not comfortable meeting with us, then maybe with his appointed folks, because I think I do appreciate the co-chair's frustration. We just want more communication so that we can meet the needs of the state together. That's all I'll add to that, is that I think it is an important conversation that I'd love to be a part of because I want to help. And I'll leave it at that. Now I have questions, if I may.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I have been available since day one. I am still available to answer questions. I am still available to address the committee to answer questions regarding processes or what's involved. That has always been an open offer since day one of me presenting to this committee.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I'll respond. Thank you. And you have been in my office several times, and I've appreciated all of those answers. I know also that sometimes you're not privy to some of the decision-making that may come down the line, like you've said earlier. And so I guess what I'm getting at is that I would love for us to have more of the conversations that I think all four bodies would like to have, wherein we're working together with a governor. And clearly you are there to explain all the processes, explain, you know, how it works, and then to better appreciate, I think, the will of the governor. It would be helpful for us to work together so that we're not playing this game of, well, how much support do we need in order to get something that he's asking for across the line, because he might veto what he's asking for. It's this really strange game that we're trying to play. And again, we're trying to do it in a way that hopefully serves Alaska well. So thank you. Thank you for doing your role so amazingly well. I do have a question, if I may, Co-Chair Josephson, based on what we have before us.
Quickly, please.
Thank you. So what I see is in this governor's amends is another $8.5 million for corrections have been added. If you add it all in, because of shortfalls in 2024, 2025, we're looking at $26.8 million in corrections. 1.5 in law. The question is really around the corrections piece. I wondered if you had a sense of how many correctional officers does the 8.5 million increase in UGF serve?
Director.
Chair Josephson, if I can just proceed, so people have some context on what is being referenced. On slide 3, we have the operating fiscal year 2027 amendments that have been put forward. Under the Department of Corrections, there is an $8.8 million increase associated with the bargained contract. So as you all are aware, the Alaska Correctional Officers Association is going through a mediation process that determines what the cost of living allowance will be for that union. The mediation decision was presented and transmitted to the Office of Management and Budget, and we calculated this ACOA contract. I don't have a specific number for you, Representative Galvin, on how many it would cover. It's all of the correctional officers that are budgeted within the Department of Corrections. So the entirety of all of the positions.
Understood.
And that are correctional officers.
Thank you. If we could get that later, I would appreciate knowing how many people we're covering with $8.5 million. That feels like a lot for per year a UGF, but I'd like to know, though maybe it's not. And then the other piece is in this around the correctional officers, it separates that there's a 5% COLA adjustment and then there's some 2% adjustments. Do you have an understanding of why the difference and why would there be 2% for some and 5% for others?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, the structure of the interest arbitration was that the correctional officers would receive a 5% increase effective July 1, 2026. Mm-hmm. They would receive a 2% increase effective December 31st, 2026, and a 1% increase on June 30th, 2027.
Okay, thank you. So it's stepping up. Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, that's correct.
Thank you. So, I have one more follow-up. Oh, I'll wait.
I think we should wait because we're on page two.
Okay, firefighter.
And that concerns me. Representative Bynum, then Shiragi, and I think staff.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair to Director Sanders. There was some questioning that was being directed your way from the co-chair specifically about what the actions of the executive may or may not take. I appreciate your response. I don't believe you're here speaking on behalf of the governor today. Wouldn't that be something if we actually could have a conversation with the governor and what he would want to do or not do? But the lack of information from the governor's office is an indication to me that he's waiting and ready to do that review. But with that being said, you are here in front of us today, and my question is, when we move legislation to the governor, I'm assuming that the governor is relying upon you to provide guidance and wisdom as far as what's happening in OMB. And is there anything that's currently in our revenue forecast or in the management plan or in these supplementals that give you concern that we are not going to be able to meet the obligations of the pending legislation that we put forward that's in these supplementals? Specifically, would you be giving a recommendation or potentially giving a recommendation if there's a concern based on where we currently sit today?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, I'd like to give an example a second for the committee's just reference. Prior to Friday and the release of the spring forecast, as well as the release of the amendments, my role and the Department of Law's role is to advise the governor when he is signing legislation into law. At that point, just as I explained to Co-Chair Shiragi with the last year's change in the STIP program and the source of funding that was behind that, had HB 289 passed on Wednesday when the spring forecast had not been released and a CBR vote had not been met, there would have been an unfunded budget at that point in time. And the governor would have had to evaluate whether or not he was signing into law a bill that had revenue supporting those appropriations. That's my role. My role is to ensure that the governor has the information needed, and the Department of Law's role as well, is to ensure that he is signing a bill that passes the responsibility of the constitutional requirements. Clearly, the spring forecast, as Director Dan Stickle shared yesterday, the spring forecast changed the perspective of where we are. So that is why there are a lot of factors that go into play on signing a piece of legislation. There are a lot of technical aspects. I don't want to speak for the governor in his decision to sign a law, a bill into law, Just as I would never want to speak for any of you on the decisions that you guys have to make as legislators on what is included in an appropriation bill. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Through the chair, specifically what I'm asking is that as we sit here today, from your perspective, giving advice to the governor, if you can say, do you have any concerns about where we currently sit today, given the revenue forecast and pending legislation for supplementals, that you would have a concern or express a concern to the governor that we have a problem?
That, Director.
If you can say, and you may not be able to say.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, it would be premature for me to say anything until a piece of legislation is passed.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We're going to take two more questions and march through this PowerPoint. So we'll go to Representative Co-Chair Shragi and then staff.
I don't know that I, Co-Chair Josephson, I don't know that I have a question. I just, because more or less my question followed or aligned with Representative Bynum's, how can you not tell us today whether or not you would advise the governor whether or not you would have concern with the appropriations in the supplemental bill based on the revenue forecast that we just received? You're saying that we can't make that evaluation until it's on his desk? We're trying to find out whether or not there are sufficient revenues for us to be able to, for you to be able to advise the governor that these appropriations should stand and go into law. And we're not getting an answer. And I know you're not the governor and you can't give us his opinion, but you represent the governor. You're a part of the team. And how am I as an appropriator supposed to know whether the appropriations we're sending you are within the realm of possibility to be funded based on the forecast that you all put out? And you're not giving me feedback from what I understand. I don't mean to be adversarial, but I'm trying to make an informed decision as an appropriator, and I'm not hearing a position from the administration on whether or not we have sufficient revenues to meet the appropriations requested by the administration.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Shragi, if a bill was passed that mimicked the governor's appropriations, he would still need to evaluate what the fiscal picture is at that point in time. I know that that's what bill are you giving me? What bill are you asking me to provide analysis on for you? There are a lot of moving parts, as we've all seen through this process. Funding sources make a difference. Revenue picture makes a difference. Last year, when the governor signed the operating and the capital budgets into law, he asked the Department of Revenue to provide an updated revenue forecast at that time because there was such volatility. Mm-hmm. And so I understand people want a very clear and decisive response. It isn't a clear and decisive response to give because there are factors at play.
But if I may respectfully, Chair Josephson, through the chair, we have a forecast that is 3 days old. It's about as up-to-date as you can possibly get. We have a known bill with known appropriations, with known funding sources. If we sent that bill as being advised by our members that we should send that to the governor today, that bill with a CBR vote failed, what new information do we need to be able to make that decision? I mean, I feel like all of the factors that you're telling us are need to be weighed and considered are known at this time.
Through the chair, Representative or Co-Chair Shragi, I think the point is I am not a legislator. I am not in your role. I am not in your I work for the administration. There is a legislative body to advise the legislative body. I am not going to advise the legislature on what they should or should not do. That is not my role. And from there, it's a decision. You have legislative finance division that can advise you if you're looking for advice on what to do or not to do.
Yeah. I'm looking for the administration's position, and we're not getting it.
And I guess consistent with that, you said it's not your role, but it's absolutely the governor's role to offer advice. That's what governors do. But
Chair Josephson, I'm happy to relay that to the governor.
Please
do.
And
if the governor would like to set up a meeting with all of you, I will relay that message as well.
Okay. It just strikes me, as I've thought for years, it's sort of underutilizing authority. And typically you want to utilize authority, but different styles. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Chair Justin. Through the chair, Ms. Saunders, I will be pretty quick again. Just a quick series here. First question pertaining to HB 289, the bill that is being held in the Rules Committee. First appropriation, actually one of them is just to recapitalize the higher ed fund. Can you, as OMB director, take action currently and recapitalize the fund without us transmitting that bill and having it signed into law?
Through the chair, director. Representative Stapp, no. An appropriation is required to take any action.
Okay. Follow, Mr. Co-Chair?
Follow up. Rep. Stapp.
All right. So you can't put the HIFE money back until we give the authority and the governor signs the bill into law to recapitalize HIFE. What about the additional funding for the DOT match? Can you, as OMB director, just put that money in the budget? Or do you need us to send the bill or a similar bill that is currently sitting in the Rules Committee through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, an appropriation would be required.
Okay. Thought, Mr. Co-Chair?
Yes. Can I ask it for you?
Sure.
No, I'm teasing. Rep. Stapp, follow up.
Yeah. Thank you. Obviously, you know, I read in the paper today, three of my colleagues here at this table wrote in my local newspaper that you, based on this revenue forecast, do not have the money to act upon that bill if it did not come from the CBR. They say the claim is that is not funded, and they also wrote that people should contact me and tell me to take the money out of the CBR. It is very clear to me that here are the things that are true at this table. Number one, based on current information, if we were to transmit HB 289, you can act on those items so long as the governor approved you're acting on those items. Number two, the available revenue currently exists to be able to act on those items through your own testimony. So my final question to you is, in the event that the governor, I know you can't speak for him, director, but let's say the bill is transmitted to the governor and the governor directs you as OMB director to act on those items and they're funded per the testimony, would you act on those items per governor direction through the chair?
Through the chair, director. Representative Stapp, yes. If the bill was signed into law, action would be taken to return the funding to those sources.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to slide three. We talked about the corrections portion.
All right. So continuing down the slide, additional amendments that were submitted for fiscal year. If it's okay with the committee, I'm going to actually move to slide four. This summarizes the changes that were made. We've already spoken about the Department of Corrections. We have the Department of Family and Community Services. There's $5.3 million for increased to address payment assistance program within the Pioneer Homes. Due to the increased cost of caring for the residents as well as changes in the residents' financial situations, the state provides a payment assistance program. There is a corresponding supplemental for fiscal year 2026 to also address the need in the Pioneer Homes and continue the payment assistance program. Under the Department of Health, there is a $1.4 million increase to maintain the senior benefits payment program. You may recall in my last presentation, we talked about a supplemental to meet the costs of continuing the benefit payments to the seniors. This is reflecting that similar increase in the 27 budget for next year. And then lastly, a new item before the committee is under the Department of Law. There is a $2 million increase in the 27 budget, as well as a $1.5 million increase in the supplemental budget to address the increased costs in the criminal division, the costs associated with expert witness travel for those expert witnesses, and other costs associated with the criminal division continuing to operate have increased significantly, and are requested in this budget to pay for 2027 as well as fiscal year 2026.
Okay, please continue.
Galvin has a question.
Very quick question. The only thing that is not discussed in your slide four is what the University of Alaska 760 add-on plus the DGF and federal. I just didn't know what the 760 was.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, thank you for pointing that out. The University of Alaska had two unions that came to an agreement on their salaries, and so that reflects those changes.
Thank you.
Director, why is does slide four show $2 million to Department of Law I'm trying to recall, what is the 5.5 million for operating supplementals on slide five? What is that item?
So moving on to the next slide, Chair Josephson, under the Department of Law, there are two items here that I will talk to about for the supplemental. Under the Department of Law, there is $1.5 million to address case costs, and then we have a new litigation that has been filed towards the state. It's called the Vail lawsuit. It has to do with the Department of Corrections and the medical files associated with inmates. There is a significant volume of records that has to be retained. I will note, I shared this yesterday. With the other body, this $4 million is just a start. We anticipate that this will we will be back before the legislature next year with a more significant number to address the costs of going through these files associated with this litigation. If you'll recall, this is something, it's a litigation similar to the ABC lawsuit that we had for the Department of Family and Community Services. This is just another one for the Department of Corrections. In the Department of Family and Community Services, we've already talked about the Alaska Pioneer Homes. Under the Department of Health, we have a new item. This is a reappropriation from a capital project. So you will see a corresponding supplemental in the capital budget. This is to pay for staff that are working on the backlog associated with individuals and seniors. Those positions were funded for a short period of time in the operating budget through a multi-year. That money has ended. This would continue their work another year to address that backlog. And then lastly, at the bottom of the slide, I have a technical adjustment. This is the $55 million that's been referenced in many multiple presentations before this committee. It's the fire declarations that were submitted during the interim. This is formally having an item on the record that matches all of the numbers that we have been discussing over the last several months.
Okay.
In the capital budget, we have two items, one in the Department of Health that I already spoke about, which is that reappropriation. And then the second is a reappropriation that's also taking from multiple capital projects and putting them into a Medicaid electronic service authorization solution. This is work that the Department of Health needs to complete due to changes in federal law. And so they scrubbed their capital projects and identified $7.1 million that could be utilized towards making those modifications to the system. And then secondarily, there is an item in the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities for $150,000 of airport receipts. This is to install a backup generator at the Enac Airport.
Okay. Final slide.
And that's the final slide, sir, that I've spoken to already.
Okay. See, once we got on step, we did pretty well. All right. Rep. Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. So just a question regarding the health add-on that we have. I know that you talked about a backlog. I believe that we've already added on to software and hardware costs to help ensure that there's more efficiency. Is this an additional ask on the supplemental on top of, I think that it was at least $12 million, if not more. And I know we have a $12 million fine for errors, but I just want to make sure that I understand the 7.1. Is this an additional to what we've asked for and what was asked for in the past for updates?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, this is something different. This is the backlog in senior and disability services, not associated with the Division of Public Assistance.
Okay. Thank you. And one more question.
Sorry, Representative Galvin, I misspoke.
AC Halloran, do you want to join us?
Going off my memory.
Good morning. For the record, Pam Halloran, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health. The backlog Is relevant to this request, absolutely. But also relevant to this request is InterEye. If you've heard us speak about that in hearings, we're implementing that tool. We're close. The contract initiated in December, and we have staff that are working two things simultaneously. They're working a backlog and the implementation and the testing of the new assessment tool. So for that reason, we need to maintain the staff to be able to maintain focus on both of those items, the implementation of the new tool, also the growing backlog, and not fall further into backlog while that work is happening.
Through the chair, will I be able to get more detail on what that number of 7.1 is paying for then? It's probably in here. I just want to make sure. Like, in other words, you talked about staff and you talked about I assume since it's under capital, it might be also some software or hardware that's needed in addition.
AC Halloran.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, the 7.1 is associated with the Medicaid service authorization module. Okay. The 1.8 million, which is currently capital, which is being shifted to operating, as Director Sanders mentioned, is related to the NRI assessment tool.
So it's the 7.1 that I want to make sure I know about. Okay, thank you. And then I have one more question of.
Yes.
So I'm seeing in the supplementals, asked for fire and health, and I wondered if there was any discussion around education and particularly the needs in capital investments there.
Through the Director. Chair, Representative Galvin, there has not been an item brought forward as an amendment for that.
Thank you.
So, Director, that means there could have been discussion about education capital, but it was not chosen to be added as an amendment, obviously.
To the chair, Representative Josephson, there has not been an item brought forward by the administration to provide a capital project for that.
Rep Hannon for the director.
Ms. Halloran answered my question.
Okay. I want the record to reflect that Rep Allard, to my understanding, has been with us telephonically the entire hearing. And if the record could reflect that, it could reflect it at the beginning of the hearing, as far as I'm concerned. Rep Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair, Director Sanders. I was hoping that you might be able to just tell us a little bit. Slide 9, we show the Disaster Relief Fund, and then we show the Disaster Relief Fund as a contingency. This is on the differences of what's put in the budget. I was hoping you might be able to give us a little bit of a status on what's happening with relief needs as far as the funding, if you're prepared to do so.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, at a very high level, the Department of Transportation and the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs are both actively responding to the disasters. We have the extension that was provided for Department of Transportation to continue that work. The money has been allocated to the way the Disaster Relief Fund works is it's allocations to specific disasters. Those are all taken care of at this point in time. Again, we had talked about in a previous committee, we had we want to make sure that we're meeting the needs to be able to respond. This capitalization will put money back into the fund. Right now, I believe the balance of the fund that's unobligated is under $1 million. So it is a difficult place to be. If there are any future disasters, we will have to evaluate where we're going to draw from money in lieu of that fund being capitalized.
Follow up,
Rep Bynum.
On the same topic, or on the similar topic, the fire suppression fund, my understanding is the majority of the funding being requested has already been expended, minus $7 million. Is that accurate?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Bynum, I don't have that information. That would be a question for the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs.
Thank you.
Rep Galvin.
Thank you, through the chair. This is regarding the disaster relief. My understanding is we still have around 200 or so families who are in hotels, and we have 140 students who have integrated, acclimated into the local ASD school system. And so both of those components must cost a lot of money, $200 per month. And then the students, I don't know if there's been any extra help with regard to helping the school system really turn over upside down to make sure there was culturally responsive, appropriate, trauma appropriate as well, services. But I'm concerned about the one less than $1 million that you said is in that account. What could we do to help make sure there's whatever's appropriate at this point and at what level?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, you are correct. There are still individuals living in housing in Anchorage, and you are also correct. There are students that have moved temporarily into other school districts across the state. The Department of Correction, the Department of Education and Early Development's commissioner is addressing that and ensuring that those school districts that are supporting students have the resources needed to address those increase in students. As far as the fund balance, from the administration's point, we will continue to do what we have done, which is to borrow until we can get a capitalization passed by the legislature and signed into law by the governor that puts money back into that fund.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Director, I don't see any other questions. I want to thank you for your presentation. We're going to take a brief at ease, and I'm going to hand the gavel over to Co-Chair Foster. We'll be at ease at 10:11.
Okay, House Finance back on record at 10:11 a.m. We're going to go ahead and adjourn out here. We're supposed to have one bill up, and that is HB 52, Minors and Psychiatric Hospitals. But we are at the end of our time. So what my intention is at our 1:30 meeting today, we do have two bills on the docket, but we may move through those quickly. My intent is to take up HB 52 after the other two bills that we have on the docket this afternoon. And those two bills are HB 34, that's the Alaska Innovation Council. And we have, I believe, one amendment, so we might move through that quickly. And then we also have HB 91. It's the marijuana bill. We've got public testimony, and if there is not a lot of public testimony on that, then we might have enough time to take up HB 52. So with that, if there's nothing else to come for the committee, we will be adjourned at 10:12 a.m., and we'll see you at 1:30 this afternoon. Thank you.